People talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking side of me, running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a falling down key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a falling down key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on LightResistanceRadio.com. But lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people. The Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Now, where I live in southern Ontario, near Hamilton, Ontario, spring seems finally, after a long winter, to perhaps, and I underline perhaps, be here. Got a rather mild day today, and I headed down toward the Niagara Falls area on a little bit of business, and along the way, and I've noticed this perhaps for the past week, because sometimes I drive late at night, lurking along the expressway that runs along the south end of Hamilton. It is called the Lincoln-Alexander Parkway, or the Red Hill Parkway. Were a fair number of police cars. The speed limit is 90 kilometers, which is about 50. But for one area, it falls down to 40. To 80 kilometers, which is about 40 miles an hour. both of these speed limits, I believe, are artificially low. But the number of police vehicles I've seen there and on several other highways in and around this part of southern Ontario is really amazing. But really what it is motorist intimidation and revenueing. That's right. It's easy to sit there with a radar gun and nail some poor person going a little bit over the speed limit and whack them with a big fine. This basically is motorist harassment. Now, I know it brings in money, and it's easy. But it's, in my opinion, bad policing. For one thing, foolish politicians and professional whiners and criers get the speed limits on our roads work things out so that they are artificially low, which means when traffic seeks its own safety zone, people drive considerably faster than the speed limit because the speed limits are ridiculous. Secondly, the rule ought to be, and this is very important, the rule ought to be, and in law is, that you are required to be, you're obligated to be in control of your vehicle at all times. That's the rule. Other regulations and so on are just in addition. But the basic rule of the road is, as a driver, and you're an adult, of course, you have to be an adult to be able to drive in Ontario, and in most jurisdictions, as an adult, you're responsible for being in control of your car. Now, that may mean, in some cases, driving considerably below the speed limit. For instance, in icy weather, or if it's snowy, it might be foolish to drive at the speed limit. Safe operation of your vehicle might well require you to drive considerably below that speed limit. But that's a judgment, as an adult, you should be making. That's why I find speed limits, other than perhaps as guidelines, wrong. Because what it does, and this is part of an ongoing process, not just in Canada, but with government in general, and that is, it treats you as a child. Instead of saying, now you're an adult, you have to make decisions, and this is your obligation to be in control of your vehicle at all times, that's what you have to strive for. Now, of course, we have laws in the province of Ontario and many Canadian provinces against cell phone use in the car, and now it's called distracted driving, which is a catch-all and a further intrusion. I would agree that talking on a cell phone may lead to distracted driving, but again, it depends on the individual and the circumstances. You know, driving on a fairly deserted highway, one can talk on a cell phone. Now, I know there are ways of hooking it up to your ears without actually having it in your hand. In traffic where you've stopped, because the traffic is very heavy or there's a stoplight, I can see texting. But of course, we have laws against that and big fines and so on. But in this matter, I believe we've got the insurance companies who don't want to pay out a penny, and would be very happy if you paid your year's insurance and never drove the car out of your driveway. Those are their interests. Of course, they want laws passed against cell phone use in the car, and all manner of other things. But we go back to two basic principles. Number one, you're an adult, not a child. You don't have to be instructed, don't do this, don't do that. And secondly, your obligation is to be in control of your vehicle at all times. That's what the emphasis should be. So that's why I burn with anger when I see this tremendous allocation of police time and resources to sitting there with their little radar guns, trying to scarf up revenue by catching drivers driving a little bit over the speed limit. I think it's a waste of taxpayers' resources. It's insulting to taxpayers, and far better policing of the roads would occur if the police vehicles drove in traffic. Now, it's a bit more time and labor intensive. Because one could drive in traffic for, you know, half an hour and not see any real infraction. But what the police should be looking for are the type of drivers who change lanes without a signal, who drive erratically. That actually, more than speed, or people who change lanes and haven't looked or signaled. I mean, there are many accidents caused that way, or very near accidents. Now, that's the type of policing that would be effective. You go after the people who are bad drivers. And bad driving is not defined by the easy, oh, he's a couple miles over the speed limit. That's easy. It's lazy. It's lazy policing. And it also reinforces something that is very bad in our society today. And that is government at all levels, bureaucracies at all levels, love to treat the taxpayer as a child. You know, to treat you as an idiot. And I think it's really important that we fight back against that. No, I'm not a child. And no, I don't have to have Big Mommy or Big Daddy tell me what to do. But you know, it comes back down to individual freedom. If I'm pulled over, I never cease to let the officers know. I think this whole thing is an intrusion on me as a taxpayer, and that it's not effective policing. It really is just revenuing. And that's not good policing. Well, on another matter of interest, I was talking to my good friend, citizens journalist, Brad Love, up in Fort McMurray, Alberta. And he was telling me a local outrage, which once again is symptomatic of a sick and failing society. You know, a healthy society gets the basics right. It's not perfect, but it gets the basics right. Well, for some considerable time, much of North American society, and Canada in particular, have been drifting further and further away from that. For instance, we legalized so-called same-sex marriage about a decade ago. When you can't get the basics of marriage right, you know, a marriage is, come on, this is not a tough one. That's right, a man and a woman. Not two men, not two women, not a man and a dog or a sheep, a man and a woman, that's marriage. Now, there may be other arrangements or relationships, I don't deny that. Two men, homosexual or otherwise, can live together. May even have some sort of an agreement, well, you know, I'll do this, you do that. That's fine. Two women may live together, whatever. But it's not a marriage. Not saying even that relationship is wrong, but it's not a marriage. Well, we've lost that distinction. Now, of course, the same-sex couples are adopting children. Same-sex couples are even creating children. Yeah, I won't go into the gory specifics, but when we can't get that right, is it not surprising, or is it surprising, rather, that we don't get immigration right? That we have an ongoing government-enabled invasion of our country by illegals from the third world, mostly streaming up from the United States. Now, that's symptomatic. When you can't get the basics right, and you don't get the other things right. Here's a good example. Getting back to what Brad Love told me. Now, Brad said, called me, and he said, well, have you heard the latest from Fort Mac? I said, no, but I'm sure you're going to tell me. He says, yeah, they're building a heliport at our local hospital for about $8 million. a heliport is a facility that will allow a helicopter to land, usually on the top of or very close to the hospital, or in this case, it's a hospital. Now, this was required by a government report or court order, as I understand from Brad, a couple of years ago, and here's what happened. Workers from Red China have been working on a project in the oil sands, which are about 50 miles outside of Fort McMurray, British Alberta. And these people were utterly unqualified. The engineering, the people supposedly had credentials. Now, many engineering credentials from China and India are forged, that they don't exist. And the worker, the supposedly skilled workers on the site also were not in fact skilled, were not in fact qualified. And they built a large container, as I understand it from Brad, and because they were in fact frauds, hired because they were cheap by the oil companies, because they were in fact frauds, they were not able to do the job properly. The structure collapsed, and a number of the Chinese were killed, and a number more were injured. So you say, well, what does this have to do with the heliport? Well, there was an inquiry into the accident afterwards, and one of the recommendations was that the local hospital have a heliport, because had it had a heliport, the injured workers could have been brought more quickly to directly to the hospital. Now, in fact, the Fort McMurray Hospital is a relatively small one, and most serious cases get sent on farther south to Edmonton, Alberta, which is a city of over a million people and has larger, more sophisticated, more capable hospitals. All right. The reason those workers died and others were injured was not for lack of a heliport. They were killed and injured partly because of their own fool mistakes and fraud, and decision by the companies to hire people who were manifestly unqualified, and the Canadian government allowing these people to come to Canada to compete with qualified Canadian, usually unionized workers. That's the problem. Those people, number one, should not have been in Canada. Number two, should not have been on the job. But because we won't address the real problems, the taxpayers of Alberta will pick up about $8 million to build a heliport at a hospital which probably really doesn't need one. Because most patients will be transported further south to Edmonton. And that's a good example of a failed state, or a failing state, where because you can't get the basics right, you don't get other things right. It's not surprising. That's why I and others sometimes may seem to harp a little bit on the same-sex marriage and some of the other decisions made in Canada. Because when you fail to get even the most elementary things right, it's perhaps not surprising you don't get the other things right. It goes without saying. If you're basically mentally messed up, or in the case that we fought and will continue to fight in British Columbia, of the transgendered creature, born a male with a penis, father two children, who now fancies he's a female. This is Ronan Auger, now claiming to be Morgan Auger, and insisting that he be referred to as she and her and all that. We'll continue to fight that because it's mentally and morally wrong.
And some people say, well, it doesn't really matter, you know, he wants to be called, he who thinks he's a she, indulge them, you know, like, what does it matter? Well, it does matter, because when you let delusional people shape your reality, that does have consequences. You know, it's often said, you know, ideas have consequences. Yeah, they really do have consequences. And you know, if you buy into nonsense, you're going to promote nonsense. And our country has gone indeed much of Western society has lost track of the basics. You know, when you have same-sex marriage, when you have when you play to the delusions of the transgendered, this does have consequences, because you begin to be unable to see other things that are important. You get other things wrong, like the immigration policy of most of Western Europe, and of course Canada and the United States, despite some of Donald Trump's attempts to reform. These bad ideas do have consequences, very bad ones indeed. Here's an interesting commentary by Mike Walsh, who is an Irishman, a prolific writer of books, and he has an online webpage called This is Europa, Race, Nation, Culture, Heritage, Tradition, and Family. And this is from a very recent posting of his. His observations are always, very, very trenchant and right on. To save face, Facebook pays big money to fake media. And there's a picture, of course, of Zuckerberg facing an onslaught of negative headlines and critical press coverage. Facebook has begun paying UK newspaper The Daily Telegraph to run drooling stories about the positive impact the social media giant can have on people's lives. These features will appear to newspaper readers as genuine news scoops rather than being the paid-for advertorials that they are. The partnership has seen the Telegraph run 26 stories defending Facebook over the last month, dismissing techno fears about the company while dealing with issues of key importance, including terrorist contents, online safety, and cyberbullying, Business Insider reported. The series is being called Being Human in the Information Age and is overseen by Telegraph Spark, the paper's sponsored content unit. The stories are mini-labeled, brought to you by Facebook, but aside from that, they are indistinguishable from regular news stories, so they're basically planting their own self-promoting propaganda. Now here's one. Tackling hate speech and terrorism on social media. Well, in a free medium, and free speech really is important, why is Facebook even tackling hate speech? Well, of course it does. What it does is try to impose its own ideology and suppress dissent. Some time ago it banned hate speech, whatever that is, whatever somebody hates, I guess. They then went on to ban white supremacists, right supremacy. When I hear somebody banning or white supremacy or denouncing it, I ask myself, well, okay, whatever this white supremacy is that you don't like, what is it you do like? I mean, is it you want white inferiority? Is that what you want? Anyway, this, of course, is seldom asked. Well, recently, about a week and a half ago, Facebook announced it was banning white nationalism because white nationalism is like white supremacy and it's violence, you know, like terrorism, I should say. So it's all one big link. And what it is just outright political censorship. And, you know, I urge people to never let this go. You know, if somebody rightly tells you, we live in a free country, or the internet is so free, come right back at them and say, no, it is not. And no, we don't live in a free country. We live in a country where huge efforts are taken to try to suppress freedom. No, we don't live in a free country. And it's important to get those ideas out there. Don't let them get away with it. Don't let them get away with at the same announcing one restriction after another on free thought and free speech, while at the same time preening themselves of, we believe in free speech. No, they don't. Absolutely, do not believe in free speech. And so this latest propaganda effort by Facebook should be really denounced. And his report continues. Another classic case of fail Facebook occurred when as part of the new campaign, The Telegraph ran a piece about Facebook's work to ensure terrorist content is identified and removed as swiftly as possible. Poor timing. Just 2 days later, a gunman killed 50 people at a mosque, two mosques in New Zealand, and live-streamed the gruesome event on Facebook. Should they have stopped it? No. They should not have stopped it. A recent scoop on the vicious anti-white racism of Facebook published by the Ethnic European, Facebook's vicious anti-white racism, recently garnered nearly 3,000 shares on that one platform. Yes, Facebook is part of the enemy. And something I want to point out, ideas, especially in this cyber age, have a way of spreading. So I think it's important that we put certain ideas out there and talk them up. And one of the ideas is that Facebook, like YouTube and Google and PayPal, are virtual monopolies. And as monopolies, they should not be allowed to discriminate. Either they should be broken up by legislation or compelled to operate as public utilities. And what I mean by that is your local electrical company cannot discriminate against you because you are, let's say, a white nationalist or a black nationalist or a Catholic or a pagan or a Republican or a liberal or a conservative or a Democrat, as the case might be. If you can pay the fee, they must provide you with the service. Part of the thinking is that they are a monopoly, at least usually in a given geographic area. So if they were allowed to discriminate, you might be unable to get electricity, for instance. And in the modern cyber age in which we live today, some of the bigs like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and so on are virtual monopolies. And they must be compelled not to censor by government legislation. Now, Donald Trump has made some comments in that direction. And I think that this is a line of thinking that should be strongly supported, because these enterprises are very much in the hands of our enemies. They're enemies of free speech. People who, for either because of belief or an eagerness to get along with the globalists,
are prepared to censor ideas, and we must fight back. Now, that's one way. Start demanding that they be curbed. Another way, and both of it can be done at the same time, is to urge and support the development of alternative media. For instance, Gab is an alternative to Twitter, and it doesn't censor. BitChute is an alternative to YouTube. As far as I understand it, they do not censor. You know, we have many very intelligent people in the white nationalist movement, and these people should be encouraged to use their creativity to create those institutions that, you know, will eventually substitute for or replace corrupted media like Facebook. We're not there. We're not quite there yet. But I think we can get there. I think it's extremely important, for our communication survival. As always, we're in a war. We're in a war for our freedom. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Good friend of mine in Manitoba is Jerry Neal. He's a he's an old-fashioned monarchist. He's a Tory. He's a high Anglican. I don't mean he's on drugs, but high Anglican or high church as opposed to low church. Jerry writes very, very thoughtful and very interesting essays, and I'm going to reference his latest one, which we publish as Graham's. And incidentally, if you'd like to get on my emailing list for our commentaries, please drop me a note at paul@paulfromm.com. That's P-A-U-L at P-A-U-L-F-R-O-M-M.com. And this is the latest from Jerry Neal. And it's called Schadenfreude. And that's a German word that means the enjoyment of us, the rejoicing in the sufferings of others. Rejoice in the sufferings of others, or take a sneaky bit of pleasure when somebody else has problems. It's something I'm sure many people are tempted to do or feel, but it's not a pretty behavior. Anyway, on the fourth Sunday in Lent, we were given a sermon on the Love Thy Enemy passage in the Sermon on the Mount. This is Jerry Neal writing. While it's probably not entirely within the spirit of that passage to engage in Schadenfreude over one's enemy's misfortunes, I find it impossible to resist doing so, since this era of triumphant liberalism affords few opportunities for such to a man on the right, like himself, like Jerry Neal. The Liberal Party of Canada has, over the years, made itself odious to all sorts of Canadians, but most consistently to two groups who despise them for very different reasons. The old Tories, of the kind frequently but erroneously called Red Tories, we call them the Country Club Republicans or the Socially Liberal Republicans, or in England they'd be called the Wets. And Jerry goes on to say, that is, the ones who prize Canada's British and Loyalist history, traditions and heritage, her constitutional monarchy, Westminster parliamentary system of government and common law, her ongoing ties to the British Commonwealth, and who associate all this with an older, more organic, more rooted vision of society than modern individualistic commercialism
And they see the liberals quite rightly as a power of ruthless modernizers who can conceive of values in no terms other than those of a price tag, and whose goal is to sell out the Dominion and everything for which she once stood to Yankee capitalism for a quick buck. On the other hand, the rugged rural inhabitants of the prairie provinces of Western Canada, whom the liberals and their academic media fellow travelers dismiss with redneck and other worse epithets, have long loathed the was a slang term for the liberals, the grits, or the liberals, as being a party of totalitarian socialists who have A, tax them to death, B, ignore or worse, aggravate their economic difficulties, and C, display the same arrogant contempt toward them that the Obama-Clinton Democrats display toward middle and working class red state Americans. Both of these negative views of the liberals are entirely valid. And the second category, someone like myself, that's Sherry Neal, who has belonged to both groups simultaneously for all of his life, a redneck Tory, would be one good way of putting it, I suppose, has particularly good reason to look upon the Liberal Party with utter abhorrence. The Liberal Party has always been bad, but it has sunk to new depths of depravity under the current leadership of Captain Airhead. That's Justin Trudeau, who I call the Trust Fund Kid. Leadership of Captain Airhead, who, more than any of his predecessors, has brought shame and disgrace upon the office of Her Majesty's First Minister in this Dominion. Will Ferguson divided Canada's prime ministers into two categories, boneheads and bastards. But Captain Airhead has the distinction of being both smug, arrogant, self-righteous, and preening. All of his public statements and actions before and after taking office have calculated to project, with the cooperation of a fawning media, a carefully crafted image of himself. Since that image was that of the opposite of, at first, his predecessor Stephen Harper, then later American President Donald Trump, it has all along resembled a bad caricature of the West, of the worst sort of loony leftists. He began his term by trying to import the migrant crisis that has been threatening to inundate Europe and create a Camp of the Saints scenario for half a decade, creating a miniature version of America's southern border crisis at our 49th parallel. At the end of his term, signed an insane an evil United Nations accord on migration, which in effect amounted to an agreement to surrender our Dominion's essential right to maintain and police our own borders. Any and all criticism of this, or for that matter, any of his other policies, was met with accusations of, well, you can predict it, racism. He used the federal summer jobs funding program to coerce employers into agreeing with abortion on demand, having previously evicted pro-lifers from the Liberal Party. You know, you cannot be in favor of life as an elected member of the federal party or a candidate. If you are, you better keep your views to yourself, and you are not allowed to vote your conscience. You must support abortion. And he otherwise attempted to shove his woke notions down all Canadians' throats by legislation, or at any rate parliamentary motions condemning Islamophobia and protecting the newfound right of individuals to choose or even make up their own gender identity. That, of course, is now legislated law, unfortunately. Jumping on board the bandwagon of an environmentalist movement that has long ago lost sight of its original legitimate goal, the conservation and preservation for future generations of natural resources and aesthetics. And this environmental movement has now gone to seed on apocalyptic end-of-the-world alarmism. He sabotaged and destroyed Canada's energy industry. And then, just as this year pulled the world's most tasteless April Fool's Day prank by slapping down a carbon tax that will accomplish nothing but a needless rise in the cost of living, which hurts the poor and the working class the most, and does absolutely nothing to fight climate change. I'll tell you why. There's nothing we can do about it. That's it. Sorry. Earth has, over the last couple million years, in regular cycles, gotten colder and warmer, and colder and warmer. And there's nothing man can do about it. Well, of course, you can pray, I suppose, but if you think that by leaving your car at home or preventing your neighbor from driving a car because you slapped a carbon tax on gasoline and you're all forced to walk or go by bicycle, you think that's going to have any effect on the weather? Sorry, it's not. All the while, his extravagance with the public purse has made his father's previously noted for record deficits look like a model of budgetary austerity in comparison. Speaking of money, he had the audacity to take the image of our first and greatest prime minister, the man who spearheaded the Confederation Project and led the Dominion for most of its first two decades, fighting tooth and nail to get the railway built that would unite the country and prevent the country from splitting up and falling into the avaricious hands of the Republic to our south. He took it off the $10 bill and replaced it. That was our first prime minister, a nation builder, Sir John A. Macdonald, and replaced it with that of a woman who achieved fame decades after the fact, thanks to the Liberals' desperate sifting of Canadian history for an equivalent of the figures of the American Civil Rights Movement for sitting down in a theater. This woman, who actually went and would spend most of her life in the United States, is now graces our $10 bill because she resisted an effort by a Halifax theater way back in the late 1940s to segregate her because she was a Negress. Hardly a Joan of Arc of the whatever you want to call it, civil rights movement. I mean, like basically a nobody on our $10 bill. But it feels so good, doesn't it? You know, we're so inclusive here. We have a Negress. And we replace our own prime minister. And this is kind of plays back with to my theme of being morally lost. You can't get the basics right, you don't get other things right as well. It's been with much joy and pleasure, therefore, that I, this is Jerry Neal, have been watching Captain Airhead's image and popularity implode over the last couple of months. If there's been a cloud amidst all the silver lining of the SNC-Lavalin affair, it is that it took an ordinary, run-of-the-mill corruption scandal to bring about the collapse of his reputation after all the evils mentioned in the preceding part of my essay failed to do so. Perhaps the best way to look at this is to regard it as a case of the straw finally breaking the humpy back of a camel. To briefly summarize the scandal, a large corporation that has been a significant and at times illegal donor to the Liberal Party, and which is based in the home province of the Prime Minister, namely Quebec, has been under prosecution for bribing a foreign government, and last year our government snuck a bill in with a budget that allows for slap-on-the-wrist treatment of white-collar crimes of this nature. When Jody Wilson-Raybould was shifted out of her cabinet position of Minister of Justice and Attorney General in January of this year, rumors began to circulate that this was because she'd refused to give in to pressure from the Prime Minister's office to apply the new rules retroactively to SNC-Lavalin. And in other words, instead of a prosecution for criminal behavior, they would be allowed to plead guilty, own up to what they did, and pay a fine. Which legally, actually does leave them with a record, does not leave them with a record. So legally is a much preferable for them. Uh, As Jay Curry observed, the real scandal in all of this ought to have been the revelation that the government snuck legislation in to give their friends a break. Instead, what everybody jumped on was the compromise of a politically independent judiciary by improper political interference in the prosecution. At least that's what the Prime Minister wanted to do, but his Minister of Justice refused to go along. To put the same matter in Canadian rather than Yankee terms, as our press should have been doing all along, although they have probably long ago forgotten what little they ever knew of Canadian civics, and the rulings of the courts of the Queen Queen on the bench are not to be decided and dictated for political reasons by the ministers of the Queen and Council. Whether we speak Canadian or American, it is a rotten and corrupt thing to do, and the Prime Minister being guilty of it would not have come as news to anyone still capable of remembering that we were not always at war with East Asia. Of course, a reference to Orwell, where history in 1984, where history was constantly being rewritten. What, after all, did his improper tweets following the Gerald Stanley jury acquittal last year constitute, if not an unashamed and public display of such interference? Gerald Stanley was a Saskatchewan farmer who shot and killed a Native Indian who was part of a number of Native Indians who had trespassed on his land and were attempting to steal some things and were threatening his wife and family. And Gerald Stanley shot this Indian. He argued, and the jury agreed, he had only been trying to scare him or drive him off. He had not meant to shoot him, but the gun went off, and so on. Well, when that verdict came in, the Prime Minister considered it a great injustice. He, of course, wasn't at the trial, because it did not obtain vengeance for one of the favored minorities, in this case Indians. And one of the allegations was, well, there hadn't been any Natives on the jury. And Gerald Needle continues, indeed, this was a far worse instance of such interference, and one in which Jody Wilson-Raybould was equally guilty, because she's a Native Indian, of course, for it had all the appearance of promising changes to the jury selection process that would compromise such ancient principles as the right of the accused to the presumption of innocence and the right of the accused, not the victim, to a trial by his peers, and put in place of the justice based on such principles a primitive form of blood-based vengeance, as if Orestia was being played out in reverse. It was at this point that Captain Airhead and the then Justice Minister should both have received a summons to Rideau Hall and been told that Her Majesty no longer required their services. Yeah, and like in the old days, the Governor General standing in for the Queen might well have cracked down on these two and said, you're a disgrace, you're gone. Well, of course, that didn't happen. Of course, Jerry goes on, this didn't happen. And for that, we ought to burn an effigy of William Lyon Mackenzie King annually, for it was that longest-sitting grit premier who subverted the Westminster's principle and undermined the accountability of the Prime Minister's office, turning it into a virtual dictatorship whenever there is a majority government. As the SNC-Lavalin scandal developed, Captain Airhead's team tried desperately to salvage their leader's reputation. But their every effort, beginning with the self-immolation of Seymour Butts, my apologies to Matt Grinning and his creative staff for appropriating what was originally a joke of theirs, but I refuse to sully my own Christian name by admitting that it is shared by this man. That's the real name of Trudeau's sidekick from college and principal secretary and close advisor is actually Gerald Butts. It was all like adding fuel to the fire. Now the very people who for the past 4 years swooned at the very mention of Captain Airhead's name are falling over themselves in their efforts to get as far away from him as possible. The scandal having broken on the eve of the next Dominion election, which will be in October, things have gotten so bad for the airhead grits that they can think of nothing else to do than recycle the lame tactics that failed to win Hillary Clinton the last American presidential election by telling us that Andrew Scheer is courting the far right. And most hilariously, since it has come a week after the Robert Mueller announced that he could find no evidence that the Trump team had colluded with the Russians, with Russia, Trudeau's even warning us of Russian interference in our election. There's a lesson in this for Captain, because it is 2015, airhead, if he's capable of learning it. Those who ride on top of the crest of the wave of fashion will crash hard when the tide goes out. Taylor Swift may very well have been right, and she and whoever she was singing to at the time will never go out of style. But Justin, baby, you just ain't her. Anyway, this is, another excellent commentary by my friend Gerald Neal, a Tory, high Anglican, a conservative, a monarchist, all those things that the liberal order just loves to hate. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to take my musical break right now, and hope you have a couple songs that you'll like. And this is one by Becky Hobbs, blonde lady, singer-songwriter. Jones on the jukebox. Hobbs and Jones on the jukebox. Here's another song recorded by so many different singers. This by Sarah Evans, Walk Out Backwards. Sarah Evans and a great old favorite, Walk Out Backwards. Very clever wording. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me here on White Resistance Radio. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever.
In days of yore from Britain's shore, Wolfe, the dauntless hero, came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes, and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.